Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Corey Strepp, who comes from a long line of volunteer firefighters. Fourth generation firefighter with 18 years of volunteer and career experience, becoming the first career firefighter within his family. Currently a lieutenant with the City of Xenia Fire Division in Ohio. Corey believes strongly in outside training, transparency within respective crews, and forming a positive culture within firehouses. Although we need fire department leaders to be on board with certain changes in culture, water boils from the bottom, and in order to affect change, we must first look within ourselves. With that, I present Mr. Corey Strepp.
All right. My name is Corey Strepp. I'm a lieutenant with the City of Xenia Fire Division, assigned Agent 31. Anything that we talk about today is certainly my views only and not that of the city or the fire division.
All right. Corey, appreciate you coming on, man, talking shop.
Appreciate you having me.
First question that I always jump into with every guest is, how'd you get into the fire service?
Yeah, so I was kind of born into it. I'm a fourth generation volunteer fireman, and I'm the first one that, you know, took it as a career. But my great grandfather was a charter member of the volunteer fire department of the town that I grew up in. And so, you know, he served for a long time. My grandfather served for 50 years on that fire department. And then my dad was on for 15 years, aunts, uncles, my brother, myself. So from like 1950 to 2012, there was someone from my family on that fire department. And so kind of grew up around it, you know, from a young age. And like the first time I rode on a fire truck, I think I was either 3 or 4 years old, and was in the back of an open cab, Pierce Dash. You know, after a parade, my dad let me sit on his lap, and we, you know, rode back up to the station on the back of the engine. And then, you know, just like most kids, you know, fell in love with the big red fire trucks. And, you know, you talk to a lot of kids and they want to do this as a career. And then I just stuck with it. And then, you know, around, I was probably 12 years old, and I started hanging around the firehouse a lot more. They would do like weekend truck checks. So they would get together every Sunday morning and check off all the equipment. And so my grandpa would come and pick me up. My dad was no longer on at that time. So my grandpa would come pick me up for their weekend. I'd go up and I'd be up there, you know, start saws and running generators and doing all kinds of stuff with them, helping check off the trucks. And then kind of recruited some other, you know, guys my age that I thought might be into it. And we kind of started pushing them, and they started like a junior firefighter program. So I got enrolled in that and did that for a couple of years until I was finally, you know, turned 18 and was able to actually join the big volunteer side of it. Mm-hmm. And then started running there, and then, you know, they sent me through my initial training, put me through, you know, fire academy and then EMT school and then paramedic school, and then got a part-time job, and then eventually got a full-time job with Xenia, and that's where I'm at today.
Okay, all right. For those that don't know, can you tell us a little bit about the city of Xenia, the size, how many stations, personnel, things of that nature?
Yep. So Xenia is in Greene County, Ohio. We're the county seat. The population is like 26,000-ish. It's all career guys. It's two stations. So we are fire and EMS. So we run ambulance service as well. So there's 14 personnel assigned to each shift. And then daily minimum is 11. So we always have at least three on the engine and then two ride the ambulance. And then it can kind of vary if there are more people working that aren't off on EDO or vacation. The ladder truck could be staffed, or it is generally cross-staffed by the medic company. So okay. Medic can get on to the ladder truck and bring it for fire responses. So we run, I think we did like 6,300 calls last year, you know, between both fire and EMS, most of it obviously medical stuff. We're pretty tight geographically. So the stations are about a mile apart. The city is growing, and so they're trying to kind of relocate station two a little further west, because the city's had a lot of growth on that side. So the response times can get a little lengthy going over there. But it's a pretty tight city. So our response times are pretty quick to get out the door and get to wherever we're going.
Okay. This is a pretty interesting statement of your ladders cross-staffed with the paramedic group. And I'm assuming are all your personnel, are they all BLS or ALS required?
So we require all of them to be ALS. We will hire folks that are BLS, and then we'll send them to the paramedic class.
Gotcha.
And so ultimately, everybody has to be a paramedic. Most of Ohio is that way. There's, you get up north around Cleveland, and some of the departments up there it's separate, but most of Ohio is, fire-based EMS, and most of the departments will require you to become a paramedic. Now, some of them, like the city of Columbus, you can drop it after you've been a paramedic for so long, but the suburban departments, most of them require you to be a paramedic, and then yeah, everyone rotates around, and then we treat so our station two. It's just there's an engine and a medic there, so we treat that medic like a truck company on fire calls. They just don't have the ladder truck, so but it's got we put a tick on there. They've got hand tools on there. Got SCBAs on there. So if there's a fire on their side of town, they take first due truck responsibilities, which residential is going to be a primary search for us. So they'll go in and search. So we don't, unless if they roll up and there's like a victim laying in a front yard or something, they'll obviously take the EMS side of it. But if there's not, then we treat them like a truck crew.
Okay. Okay. Nice. Yeah, that has its definitely has its role on there, because I've interviewed some guys that the paramedics are strictly just paramedics. So it's like, well, do they go to fire? Yeah, they go to a fire, but they have to act as like the EMS side. So I mean, that's pretty neat. Okay.
It's we're like to the west of us is another staff fire department, but everyone like north, south, and east of us is still a lot of rural, so it's made up of part-time or volunteers. So it may be a minute before we get a medic there for any victims or rehab potential and stuff. But we if we get dispatched on a report of a fire, if we get there and we make it a working fire, it will automatically pull another medic in for that reason.
Okay.
That way we have some dedicated EMS folks there.
Gotcha. Any battalion chiefs or shift commanders?
We do have a shift commander. They're the rank of a captain, but they perform the role of the battalion chief. We kind of molded that. So it used to just be back in like the late 90s, there was just a lieutenant at each station, and they said this doesn't really work. We kind of have to have one person kind of be in charge. So they created the captain spot, but their minimum banding then was 12. So the captain rode the ladder truck and they staffed the ladder truck every day. And then financial issues of the early 2000s came. We lost a position, and then so then the captain would go down and ride the engine. And then in like 2016, they said, no, we want to put these guys in a buggy all the time. So since then, they've been in a buggy. So they perform the battalion chief responsibilities. We just call them captains.
Gotcha. Okay. You get a little feedback on your end. Okay. My next question for you was, what do you guys get on a first due within the city of Xenia box? I know, of course, you probably get in both stations. Do you get mutual aid?
Yeah, so it will dispatch four engines, a ladder, a medic, and then two command officers. So if we have both engines and both medics are in-house, it will pull two mutual aid engines. And then everything is pre-built. We don't have to build them on the fly like some places still do. So if we have one of our engines out on another call, it will pull a third mutual aid engine. So it's always pulling four engines, a ladder, a medic, and two chiefs. And then if it's a working fire, it pulls another engine, another medic, and then it starts the utility companies, and then it starts a recall for us for like our off-duty guys to come in and staff the station.
Are your mutual aid companies career or volunteer?
It's split. The town just west of us, Beaver Creek, they're all career. So if we have something on the west side, they'll be on there. And then Xenia Township kind of surrounds us completely. So if you think of like a donut, we're the hole in the middle, and then they're the rest of the donut. So they almost encircle us completely. So they have like one full timer a day, and then they supplement with part time. So they'll at least their engine is on every fire card, at least one of their, and they have two stations as well. But depending on their staffing levels, they may only have one station staffed. So we'll get one engine from them, and then if it's on the west side, Beaver Creek, which is staffed, but if it's on the east side, then it's coming from either a place that's staffed with part timers during the day or maybe volunteers at night.
Okay. And the minimum staffing on your engines, again?
Is three.
Three.
Yep.
Okay.
So driver, officer, and a jump seat.
Gotcha. Okay. All right. So my next question for you is the term aggressiveness. It's a hot topic. It's a hot term around the fire service. So my question to all the guests are, what does aggressiveness mean to you?
It's definitely like this. One of the new buzzwords, right? I think anything in firefighting is relative to your region, right? Firefighting is very local. And so, something that could be aggressive to me may be normal for you, or vice versa. And so, in the root of the term, right, like aggressive. So I think of like in those 50-50 situations, right? Man, like we're going to go or we're not going to go. So when I think of someone as being aggressive, I think when they're faced with those 50-50 calls, they choose to go more often than they choose to not go. But I don't really work with my guys a lot on, preaching about being aggressive and things like that. I tend to focus more on like not being complacent and staying ready. And, that way, what's the saying, right? Like if you stay ready, you don't have to get ready. So trying to get those guys to put in the work on the front end and avoid that complacency, always be thinking fire, always be thinking victims, have your gear set out, ready to go. If you come in on our crew, even the guys that are staffed on the ambulance, their gear is set up to respond to a fire call. So they're going to take a lot more ambulance calls throughout the day. But when they come back, they set their gear up. All the compartment doors are open. Their coats are hung up. Their boots are laid out. And, they're ready to go for that fire call. So, is that aggressive that they're doing that? Probably not, right? But like we're avoiding that complacency, which I think is just as important. Because now we're going to get out the door faster, and then maybe we don't get faced with that 50-50 call because we took care of it on the front end.
Love the answer for sure. And I like the fact that how you mentioned complacency, because complacency is one of those things, man. It's like so subtle, you don't even realize it's creeping in until it's like, oh crap, like this complacency, it's made its own bed here. And the bed's already made. Like that's how fast it can go, because you think about just little things you don't do, you're putting yourself behind the eight ball. So I love how
Absolutely.
you worded that.
And most of us probably found ourselves in that situation at some point in our career. I did early in my career, and you get with a crew that maybe isn't the most aggressive out there, right? And you kind of get yourself lulled into that same mindset, and then it takes something, like fire alarms is a big one for me. We still see folks that respond to fire alarms and they don't put gear on, they don't dress out for it, they don't bring tools, and I got burnt by that, as a part of a crew that got burnt by that when I was a young fireman. I'm like, man, like, how embarrassing, right? So, like, I preach with our guys, like, what causes fire alarms? Fires. So we've got to be prepared. So we take every commercial alarm, every residential alarm, it doesn't matter. We are dressed out, we have riding assignments, if you guys have tool assignments. So, the officer's bringing a tick, and in our system, the officer brings a New York hook with them or a Lockwood hook, and then the jump seat guy's bringing a PW can and a set of irons. And that was a small change that we made, and then now it's kind of spread globally throughout the whole organization to where now every crew is responding in the same way, and we've seen it, provide those benefits numerous times, where it's a small fire in a stove or something like that, and they report, "Oh, this thing's out." And in the past, we may have canceled people, or we would have went in with nothing, and now they're going in fully dressed out, like, "Oh man, this thing flared back up," but they've got their can with them, and they can put it out, and then we don't have to worry about going back out and stretching lines or anything like that because they were already ready to go.
When did you decide you wanted to become a lieutenant? Like what triggered that notion? Because, for me personally, I love being a backstep firefighter, and then I promoted way into my career to a relief driver position. So, did something happen, or is the ultimate goal for you a higher position?
Now, so I always had aspirations of, that one day I wanted to get promoted, right? And I didn't know when I was young, what that time frame looked like that was going to be. And at the time, our organization, you had to have 5 years there before you could test. So I, I'd been studying and I was, attend a lot of conferences and things like that already. So I was, getting prepped for it. And, but I wasn't sure if I was going to take it, because by the time the test come, I was just going to eclipse 5 years. And so I was talking to some people and some guys were like, well, you should take it, just for the experience of taking the test. And I'm like, well, no, if I'm going to do it right, I'm going to go all in with studying and everything. And so I was kind of on a fence. And then, there was one specific event that happened that kind of pushed me towards it. There was a guy on my crew that was a senior guy that had been around. He'd been there 10 years longer than me, so he was in the 15-year range at that time. And he was a guy that I'd worked with before, and he had helped train me when I was younger. And he had an incident happen with another employee, and he came to me specifically and was like, "Hey, here's the situation, and here's what I did. I want to know if you think I did the right thing." So he's coming to me as a much younger guy and saying, "I value your opinion." And that event was really kind of the trigger for me of okay, if this guy's willing to seek me out for my advice, then I'm probably ready, to take this step. And then, reached out to some mentors of mine, and we relayed that story, some other things, and they're like, yeah, we think you should do it. And so I went all in on studying, and so that was kind of the trigger that said, yeah, let's do this.
Gotcha. Okay. It kind of segues perfectly to the next question. Should there be a years of service clause in your opinion for promotion?
I think there should probably be a years of service clause just to get you into the process, but I don't really think it should count for anything after that. And you need to have some experience, right? Before you want to be a supervisor. And when you have this debate, right? What does seniority mean, right? The people that are pro seniority, they want it to equate to experience. And unfortunately, there's not a good way to relate experience and seniority, right? You
Right.
could repeat your first year 20 years, but you also have to have some kind of seniority to be able to gain experience, right? You can't gain experience without that. So I think there should probably be a time frame to say, yeah, you have to work so many years to give you the opportunity to get the experience to get in. And then once you're in, then I'm not a fan of seniority points having a heavy weight after that, because again, we're trying to equate that to experience, which we're not actually measuring. So what we want it to be isn't necessarily what it is, blanket across the board.
Okay,
Yeah.
I like it. For a promotion, a company officer or any sort of company officer, are you in favor for a simulated computer fire scenario, or actually, if the department is, if they have that capability of doing some sort of scenario at a training ground with real people and being graded in real time?
Yeah, so I don't have any experience with doing it in real time. Ours have always been done on a simulated basis. But I would like to think that the real time one would provide a much better kind of look at how things are going. I think what I would focus more on though is the realism of the scenario to the rank you're being promoted for. And what I mean by that is a lot of times we see folks, going for a company officer position. You're going to ride an engine, you're going to ride a truck. But yet when they're tested, they get tested and you're in command of this fire. They're getting tested at a captain level or a battalion chief level. And it's like, hey, could that happen? Sure. But most likely, they're going to catch a fire riding in charge of this piece. So let's operate them at the tactical level and not at the strategic level. And so if you're doing the real world one, right? I think you could put them in that role better. And you ride in on an engine company and you're assigned a task. You're assigned fire tech. Now I can truly evaluate what line you choose, how you led your crew in, your communications back to command, and things like that. I think that would certainly be better than you looking at a computer. But I think on the flip side of that, we did a real life scenario and now I put you in the incident commander role, and now I'm testing you on that ability, and other people are now making decisions that could affect your score. I think that could be problematic as well, versus on the computer side of things, even if I put you in that command role and you're kind of assigning out the strategic level stuff, I could still ask you questions about the tactical level, right? So you assign the fire attack, and then I can say, all right, well, if you were assigned fire attack, what would you, where would you park? What line would you pull? What would all this be? The right answer might be a combination of both. If you had the time and obviously the place to do it. We do the computer simulation, and they keep it at the, ours is contracted out with the Ohio Fire Chiefs Association. And so they keep it at the tactical level. And then once our guys take the test, we put them through a 1 week program. And that was something that we created. It wasn't there when I got promoted. And then the guy that got promoted after me, when we got promoted, it was kind of like, hey, like go learn on the job and go talk to the other lieutenants and kind of learn that way. And so him and I got together and said, well, what frustrations did you have with that process? And we shared, similar issues that we found. So we said, well, how can we fix this? So we put together a 40-hour program. We'd probably like it to be a little longer, but just with the size of our department, like it gets logistically gets hard. So they start out with like some admin stuff at the beginning of the week, and then we roll into the tactical stuff at the end of the week, and then it culminates in a live scenario. We have a like a propane burn trailer. And so it ends in that day, and they'll rotate. So they'll rotate around right on the engine. They'll rotate right on a ladder truck. The first two engine, second two engine, they'll be in command. And then they have an instructor assigned with them on every scenario. And then so they all perform their tasks, and then they get that instant, immediate feedback. And then we kind of critique it as a whole group as well. And then we also do the simulation stuff that on Thursday, the day before, where we'll put one of them in the incident command role, we put them in a training room and they're looking at the building. They can, get a walk around the building, look at 360s. We always use buildings that are in our district or in our city. And then the other guys go on scene. We make them talk over the radios with each other. And they'll go to a different room where there's a different computer screen. And then they'll talk tactics with different instructors over there and with all the communications over the radios and stuff. And so we'll kind of run that scenario and then bring everybody in and critique
I like how you guys do
it.
that. And I like how you hit on the nail about like the candidate's gonna be judged on their assigned tactics, not strategy, because and I know like certain departments, the either a lieutenant or a captain can get checked off to drive the car and have to make, battalion chief type decisions. But I like how you focused on like if you're a candidate going to be a lieutenant or a captain on the engine, we're gonna watch how you direct your guys, communicate, what lines you stretched, things of that nature. I like how you put that.
Yeah, because like when I did mine, it was still the old style of you're going to be in command. So I was on an engine, but I was the first officer and I had to stay in command the whole time. And it was an apartment fire on the sixth floor of a 9-story apartment complex. And so I had never ridden in charge of an engine before. And now I'm being tested on running this whole scene. And it went fine, but like, is that a fair assessment for what I really do? I've only commanded like, two or three fires come, we were riding the engine since then, right? Now sometimes I'm the senior lieutenant on our shift, so I have to ride the buggy when the captain's gone. But when I'm on the engine, I have them for that, or one of the other chief officers that come in. So it's just not a realistic, testing, in my opinion.
And a question for you, because I have never been in that position. But isn't it hard for a department to go, okay, all right, Corey, your engine arrives first due. You're running the whole scene, but we also expect you to do lieutenant duties. Like it's you can't. I mean, I'm not saying you can't, but that's a lot on the plate to have to be in charge of making sure suppression efforts are going, search efforts are going in, and having to talk under it or be in command, given assignments and not really knowing what's going on the outside because you have to be inside with the guys.
Yeah, and it builds a training scar too, right? Because we don't want our actual incident commanders operating that way. You know, we want them to be thinking at that strategic level. And so if my captain comes in and he assigns me fire attack, you know, I get to make all those fire attack decisions, right? What line are we pulling? Where are we taking it? When are we opening it? When, you know, all that. So when we test folks the other way and we make them answer all of those questions, now we're training them. Oh, when you're in command, you need to make these decisions too. And then so we see the incident commanders. Hey, I want you to park right here. I want you to pull this line. I want you to pull it to this door. Well, that's the company officer's job. So when they're doing that job, then that means they're not doing their job. And it just builds those bad habits, you know, right from the start.
Bingo, for sure. For sure. Okay. One question I did forget to ask about your department. With it being such a smaller organization, are you guys required to be a jack of all trades? Like, is it possible for an engine to show up and have to do truck work and truck work or truckies having to do engine work?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the medic crew brings the ladder if it's a fire in the city, but if the ladder's requested mutual aid, then our engine would take it. So the three of us would come off the engine, we get on the ladder, and we would go. And then, you know, if it gets requested for like a commercial fire mutual aid, we'll dump all five of us. So there are five seats on there. So the engine and the medic would come over and we would go. But yeah, we if the If the station one medic is out on a call, which happens, you know, 2,500 times a year, right? Then we don't get a ladder truck because it still dispatches our ladder because it's not cross-staffed in the CAD system because of the potential to go mutual aid. So it doesn't go out of service every time the medic leaves. So if the medic's gone, then the shift commander's got to recognize that and they have to call for a mutual aid ladder. If they want one coming, or they may show up late, they may, you know, if they're coming back, they may come back and grab it or something like that. But yeah, it's very common that, yeah, the, you know, the second due engine may get first due truck assignment if the ladder truck's not coming, or you know, if both medics are out, you know, now we're down the two truck crews that we would use. So yeah, we bounce around, and you know, I think it's, you know, most statistics are made up, right? So, like, it's a ridiculously high number of when we leave fires, it seems like we almost go to some kind of major medical incident. So, we'll leave a fire, get released from a fire, and go to a cardiac arrest. And so, yeah, we've got a jack of all trades for sure.
All right. What are your thoughts on what we can do with regarding recruitment and retention? Because that's another one of those. It just seems, and I think partly it's due to the fire service as a whole not being genuine on exactly what we do. And what I mean by that is like your department runs fire and EMS. Hopefully, if you do an ad of some sort, you let candidates know, hey, we have an ambulance service. You're going to have to run ambulance type calls. I mean, it's just part of the business. I feel like not all, but maybe there are certain departments that aren't advertising the way they should because people look, they think of the fire department, think of fire trucks, and hey, that's all I'm going to get to ride. And when they come in, it's like, hey, you're new here. You haven't built any seniority yet. You're riding the ambulance. You know what I mean? It's
Oh
like
yeah, for sure.
it's like a false sense of I mean, we're kind of like lying to the people a little bit.
Yeah, we only show them the good stuff we went to, right? To bring them in, and then they
Right.
get here, and it's like, whoa, hold on. Yeah, so I don't know. You're in North Carolina, right?
Correct.
Yeah, so I don't know if it's the same down there, but we've seen a tremendous shift up here with a lot of like the part-time agencies. The part-time model is drying up. And we have seen a huge influx of full-time positions. And, you know, just like the college sports worlds where they open up transfers, like we're seeing the same thing up here where, you know, when I got hired full-time in 2008, you if you weren't a paramedic, you had no shot at getting a full-time job. And so I took the test with 100 other people, you know, and there wasn't even a spot available. It's like, hey, we're creating a list for the next year. And it was a year later that I got hired. And I think they hired three of us off that list. Versus now, you know, we did a test and we got like 15 people to take it, and none of them were paramedics. Some of them weren't certified at all. And so we still see people leave our organization to go to another organization for, you know, whatever reason. And so now we're trying to backfill those spots. And then with since we require them to be a paramedic, if we lose a paramedic, we're generally hiring an EMT and then having to send them to the paramedic class. And so recruitment right now is tough because kind of, you know, the fire service as a whole, right? We've kind of done a poor job because what do people see on the news, right? Like, oh, well, you're going to die of cancer. The suicide rates are high, you know, and all that is important information to talk about, but it's kind of had an anti-effect on the recruitment, right? Like, hey, come do this job, right? Like the pay is kind of suspect. But like we have a lot of fun, but you might get cancer, you might get hurt, you might die. And, you know, and then just in kind of conjunction, right? Everything's going technology based. So all the schools, the career centers and stuff are all pushing technology stuff. You know, our career center has never had a fire program. There are some around us that have it. So, you know, we got to do a better job of getting into schools and working with those folks about pushing our career. But I try and get our organization to focus more on retention than recruitment. You know, we already have people working. Let's get them to stay, right? And we wouldn't have to focus so heavy on recruitment because I sit on our interview panel and like it's rough times out there right now of trying to find it. And we hire for character, right? Like we would hire an EMT of good character before we would hire a paramedic of bad character. And we would much rather hire for character and then train for skill than vice versa. But I think, you know, culture is a huge thing. And establishing the culture, you know, good culture in your organization, and then retaining the people that you already have that you have invested time and money, you know, and we do a thing where like when we send folks to paramedic class, they have to stay for so many years or they have to pay it back. But that hasn't really been a deterrent. Because they either just say, or these other departments that may offer more money, they're like, oh, I can just pay this back. So we have to keep those folks by changing the culture because some of that other stuff's out of our control. You know, I mean, we negotiate our wages and stuff, but other cities, you know, somebody else is always going to pay more, right? Somebody else is always going to have more time off and those kinds of things. So the only thing we can really combat all that with is our culture. And, you know, a lot of people kind of expect that to come from the top, right? Well, it's the chief's job. It's the chief's job. And I don't necessarily agree. You know, somebody, and I hate to quote somebody without knowing who it was, but, you know, they said change starts it's from the bottom up with top-down support. And I, you know, firmly believe that, right? Like we, us at the lower levels, like we can control that. And we want the chiefs and stuff to help support what we're doing, but we can't put it all off on them, right? Like that's got to be us working to push for these cultural changes and the things that we want to see. And then if we can improve the culture, then maybe we can retain some more people, and then we wouldn't have to focus so heavily on recruitment.
Yeah, refreshing. One thing I like that you hit was the retention part. I don't know. I'm not going to name him just in case if he doesn't want to be named, but there's a captain I know who on his social media he put a post up that I was like, you know, he's right. It was about recruitment and retention, and it was pretty much the basis of departments now are hiring for new hires, they're giving them sign-on bonuses. And the quote was like, why not give the sign-on bonuses to the people that have been at your organization for a long time? And it makes a lot of sense because I mean, you look at it, we're attracting new people with, hey, $2,500 sign-on bonus. The guy that's been here for 15 years, sorry, you don't get it. And it's kind of like, I see it. I
Oh
mean,
yeah, for sure.
I understand we're trying to bring in people, but I feel like, at least for me, I know, like, watching my parents work in things like things of that nature, I'm trying to think of the word. Longevity doesn't really mean anything anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I know if my dad was at a company for like 15 to 20 years, he was a loyal employee. You know, like that meant something
Right.
to managers and companies. But now, man, it's like the NBA or NFL lottery, like a draft. It's, hey, I'm leaving. And it's like, okay, see ya. It's
For sure. Yep.
wild.
Yep. Loyalty no more. It's yep. Up and out.
How big is, or how big of a role do you think culture plays in to an organization? Because we all see it, all firemen, if you have social media, man, like, you know, the departments that at least give the sense that their culture is strong. But I mean, I truly believe it is, but every department has issues, you know, and of course they're not going to air it out on social media. But to me, it seems like the departments that are successful, one, unfortunately, this is something we all can't control. They actually go to jobs. I truly believe if you're on a department that sees enough fire, you won't have time to dwell on things that don't really matter. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
Like, the little nitpicking doesn't exist because you're busy going to work.
Yeah. Jobs always improve morale, right? It's
For
like we've
real.
had a busy fire season for the start of the year for us. So it's been good. You know, and guys are, we've had some new guys coming in. So, you know, morale is, you know, doing good right now. But yeah, I'm a huge believer in culture. In fact, I was telling you the other day, you know, I was up in Northwest Ohio teaching at a conference, and I do a class on culture, and
Okay.
you know, kind of based on the experience and stuff that I have, you know, building the culture with my crew, and you know, like the credit goes to the guys that I work with. I mean, they are rock stars, and it's everyday actions, you know, those guys do, right? They certainly make me look good, because you know, like our kind of culture is based on, you know, the mission is first, right? We've got to take care of the mission. But my job as a supervisor is I got to take care of the guys so they can take care of the mission. But, you know, we've kind of built our culture through like having standards and expectations of each other and then holding each other accountable to those things. Just because I'm the supervisor doesn't mean that I don't get held accountable, right? Those guys will hold me accountable if I'm not doing what I say I'm going to do. And I expect that of them. But, you know, we all got together and, you know, through over time, you know, guys have got transferred in or hired in or whatever that buy into the same philosophies that I have. And so we said, okay, well, what do we want to be? Well, we want to be a crew that's, you know, we want to be competent. We want to be professional. So, like, that's our vision, right? Our vision is to be the best crew through competency and professionalism. And so that's what kind of drives us to, we train a lot, you know, avoid complacency. We want to be aggressive in all the actions that we're doing. We want to stay ready and we set some standards. So, like mask up times. So, you know, I know like in Texas, right, the whole state masks up before they get off the rig. That's not real popular up here. There are some folks that do it, but most of us don't. So, we want to have a quick mask up time. So, we require the guys to do it in under 30 seconds, and the goal is under 20. So we will train them and train them and train them to get them under 30. And then we get pretty much all of them under 20 to where one of my guys is like, he texted me the other day, they were working when I was up teaching. He was like 6.5 seconds for his mask up. And so, you know, that's a standard. We ride an engine company, right? So we have standards for, you know, how quick we should be able to deploy. We're a side crosslay, you know, engine organization. So how fast can we get that on the ground, flaked out correctly and get masked up, right? So we do that in under 60 seconds. That's the standard. You know, we have expectations, right? The tool assignments. So when we go on fire alarms, if we go, our engine is the rescue engine. So, you know, we have like extrication tools. So if we go to an entrapment, the tool assignments are already laid out, right? The jump seat guys bringing the spreaders, the officers determining what kind of stabilization is needed, and the drivers bringing the cutters. So we have all those expectations laid out. And that has kind of helped drive our culture to what we wanted it to be. And it started out small with our crew. And then as other guys have either got promoted or they made transfers to another station, now that stuff is spreading across the organization. And now we're getting that kind of compounding, multiplying effect across the organization.
Okay. I like how you how you've developed that for your crew, because and I like how the one of the key things I heard was whenever you're not setting that standard, you expect your crew to go, hey, Lou, need to step it up here. Because, you know, there are officers out there who don't want to be told that, you know, it's who are you to question me is, you know, my yeah. authority. So I love how you explain that. Yeah.
And they'll do it too, right? Like they're not afraid to call me out when I need it. And like you said, right, that's what I want. You know, I don't need a bunch of yes men and women. I need people that are going to call me out on my BS too, because I'm not perfect. I screw things up and I come up with dumb ideas sometimes. And I need them to say, look, man, no, this is stupid. And, you know, one example, I don't remember exactly what it was, but I had spent a lot of time thinking of this decision. And I come in and I tell the guys, and my senior guy at the time, who's now a captain, he was like, well, why wouldn't we just do this instead? And his idea was superbly better than mine. And, you know, this I'm like, what the crap, man? I spent a week thinking about this, and you come up with a better idea in 2 seconds. I'm like, well, yeah, man, like, let's do it your way. That makes a lot more sense. So, yeah, you got to, and like I said, my guys are rock stars, man. I love them. They take care of me. They treat me good. And it's, you know, I'm in that, like, interesting transition kind of in my career where earlier, like, I was doing a lot of the teaching and a lot of the training, and now I'm not. Because now my middle of the road guys are doing it. And so it's kind of cool. Like it kind of sucks because I want to be involved, right? But it's really cool to see them and their growth. And, you know, we just got a new guy, and he's got a guy that's been there for, you know, 3 or 4 years now, and he's training him. And so that guy, you know, we saw his growth from I'm new, I don't know what I'm doing, to, you know, get a little bit developed here, a little developed here, a little developed here, to where now he's become a really good fireman, and now he's passing on. So all the stuff that I taught to this guy who taught to that guy, now this guy's teaching it to this young guy. And it's really cool to sit back and watch that process, you know, take place. And then, so they do most of the training, and then, you know, I just get to come in and quiz them on stuff, or they show me what they learned and make sure that they're good on things. And then we move on. It's pretty neat.
Okay. How big is outside training, in your opinion, do you believe?
I'm a huge believer in getting outside your organization and seeing what's out there, you know. The organization, we send folks to, like, the major conferences. You know, we're only 2 hours from Indy, so we send a couple guys to FDIC every year. Firehouse Expo is in Columbus. That's an hour up the road, so we can send guys to that. And then we have a conference registration reimbursement in our contract. So you can get up to $1,500 each year for conference registrations to be reimbursed. So now it doesn't cover, you know, like travel and things like that. But if you found some local conferences, you know, you could go, and then the department will pay you back your registration costs. So, you know, we've invested on that side, but I like to travel and hit other conferences. So we were just in Greensboro at the training days. We went to that one this year. We went to it last year when it was in Lexington, but.
You were there?
Yeah.
I was there too. I didn't
oh,
see
man.
You.
Yeah.
Oh man, that was a hell. I don't mean to interrupt you, but that was, and I hear, like, I thought training days in Greensboro was phenomenal. And then I had guys tell me, hey, if you think that's phenomenal, you got to go to Alexandria.
I heard the same thing. I've never made that one, but it's on the list, you know, to go there. But we've done, you know, we've been down to the County Fire Tactics, Chief Ike, down in Pensacola Beach. You know, we were going down there about once a year. Pretty much, if it's somewhere on the East Coast, man, like, we'll hit it up. You know, if it's within the 12 hours, we'll just get in the car and drive and go there. We went to Wichita you know, for a couple of years to their conference. There's a handful of us going to the firemanship that Trestrail is doing over in Illinois.
Yeah, that's going to be a big one.
Yep.
So we're God, like, yeah.
Two of my guys went to FDTN last year, and then they're planning on going again. I think either later this year or next year, they're going. So, yeah, firm believer. And to me, they're twofold. You know, it's always good to go and you get the material from the instructors, but I get just as much from the social aspect and hanging out at the social events and talking to other guys across the country. And then in the smaller conferences too, you can sit down with the instructors and hang out. When you go to Pensacola Beach, you're all in the same crowded bar together hanging out, and you can pick their brains in that one-on-one session. And they're all extremely humble and willing to help, you know. And so, yeah, it's tremendous to get out. And then we went to training days. There's a group of guys from the department next to us that we all kind of go at the same time. And yeah, we just all hang out at night and, you know, pick each other's brains and talk about different stuff. And they, you know, do different things than what we do. And then, you know, we're trying to convince them to, you know, mask up with their gloves on and those kinds of things. We talk about all that. So, you know, they're fantastic. I like to go, I like to travel. You know, shout out for my wife, right? Like, she lets me go. She takes care of the kids. I get to go travel. So she's awesome.
No, it's one of those things, man. Like, if you don't get out, and when you finally do, and you finally actually talk to other firemen, you realize, like, to me, it's always one of those things like, oh man, like, it's not just my department that's like this, or it's not just my department that has this particular, every department has that one person. You're like, that describes such and such. Like, it hits it on the nail. And it's great. Also, the main thing for me is being around people who actually care for the job, not just there for the paycheck or for the status, or, you know, to say, hey, I'm a fireman, like, people that are actually there to get better at the craft. So I definitely love going to outside training. I'm trying to think in my head if I saw you there at all, but man, I can tell you, dude, like, the lectures, there were a lot of people there. Yeah. The lectures were phenomenal. I know you're a big engine guy, like Tim Klett. I don't ride it. I ride a Quint. So technically, we're kind of like an engine. But Tim Klett's class on what stood out to me was how there was a girl who talked about water mapping. And so, like, he pulled up the map and he's like, no, this is water mapping. And it was like a state surrounded by water. And what hit the nail on the head was when he was like, we're kind of doing this generation a disservice when we show them what water mapping is. He's like, we need to teach them the sound of water mapping. And absolutely. I was like, that was profound to me. I'm like, he's not lying about that.
Yep. Yeah. I love Tim Klett. I've taken a lot of his classes, man. He's great, great engine instructor. Even his officer class was fantastic too. So yeah, we had a good time down there. A lot of good, you know, lectures that went on. And and I like too when they bring in some of the, you know, lesser known guys, you know, and they get to bring some stuff up, you know, and that, so that's always cool because they seem to try and do that, always bring in someone local to talk to. So that's cool.
But
it's always interesting, right? When you get out and, like, you know, you and I go out and attend a lot of conferences, so it's kind of more normal for us, but you don't realize how many people don't do that. And when I was in Northern Ohio teaching, you know, when I do the culture class, you know, I always ask them if they know, you know, they've heard of Scott Thompson, right? He literally wrote the book on it. And I've taught that conference 3 or 4 years now, and nobody has ever heard of it. And so, yeah, it's kind of hard, you know, because we think like, oh, everybody knows all these men. They're like, well, I never heard of this guy. You know, go find his book, you know. But so, yeah, I think it's important to get outside your bubble and see what else is going on. It's just, you know, like we're talking about mask up with gloves on. And I teach with a group called Western Buckeye Training.
Yes.
Out of Ohio here. And so, you know, we do a lot of, the guy that says name's Jordan Hemker. He's the one that runs the company. And his whole goal is kind of, I want to get back to the volunteer fire service because that's where he got his start. So his whole concept is, I want to go provide, you know, realistic, reliable, good, you know, cost-effective training to these departments that I grew up in. And but we teach some stuff with Chris Kessinger and Citizens First and those guys. And, you know, they do a lot more stuff kind of – Chris does a lot more like the national scale of things. So Citizens First had a house up in Northern Ohio that they were doing some training in, and they brought in the Twisted Fire guys. And so I was talking to Chris Clark, and we were talking about gloves. And he was like, you know, anytime I have my fire gear on, I have my fire gloves on. And he's like, that way I don't forget them. And then I try and do everything I do with my gloves on, and it just becomes second nature. And I'm like, man, like that is really cool. And so after that conversation with him, I started doing the same thing. So I took my gloves, you know, out of my pocket, and I just use a little clip and I sit them on the dash in front of me. And then now whenever I get out, I have my gloves. I don't forget them anymore. I don't get caught up, you know, in, oh, there's fire, like, you know, moth to a flame thing. My gloves are already on, so it doesn't matter. And so now I do everything with my gloves on, all because of one conversation with that guy. And we were together because of an outside conference. Those guys were willing to come up, you know. And then, you know, who else have I passed that on to that are now doing the same thing, right? And it's just compounding. So,
first off, by the time this episode gets released, Jordan, I already concluded his interview. So
oh, nice.
he'll be out before you. But a great dude, and he definitely talked about Western Buckeye training. And
yeah.
Secondly, I've met the Clark family. I was actually fortunate to do the interview with the Clark family. And the Clarks are, if you're a fireman and you don't like the Clarks, you might want to, like, reconsider your life
yeah.
priorities.
Yeah, right?
Because yep. just genuine dudes who care. And I say that because in my opinion, I think if you don't like the Clark family, it's because there's something that you're not comfortable with in the fire service.
Yeah.
Because the Clark guys, they are jam up. Just like how you said, Chris talked about the gloves.
Yep.
When I did a conference last year, we were doing a hot class. Cody was the one that taught me about presetting your mask.
Yeah,
and I never knew that. It was like,
yeah.
what do you mean preset your mask? And he's like, tape it. And I'm like,
yeah.
why? And so he explains it. And I'm like,
yeah.
oh, shit. Like,
yeah.
I like it.
Sense.
So
yeah.
my mask is preset. All I have to do
yeah.
is pull one strap.
That's right.
Regardless of what NFPA says, not for practical applications. I don't really care. So
yeah.
I'm going to do what I got to
yeah.
do.
Yep.
But
I got my top two taped. Yep.
So it's one of those things, but when you surround yourself with these guys, you know, you get little nuggets you take here
yeah.
and there, and it's not mine. It's not proprietary. I share it with whomever wants to do it. So
yep.
like,
oh, absolutely.
I agree with you 100%.
Yeah. When I did those classes, I'll tell them like, look, man, if you guys want my presentation, I'll send it to you. You know, the more we said, I got, you know, I got some department videos. Like I have to take those out because they're, you know, probably the department or whatever, but like any pictures and stuff of mine, like I'll give it to you. I don't know. I've had a couple people email me and say, hey, like, I really like that. Can you send me this? Or can you send me this slide? Absolutely. You know, like the fire service has given a lot to me. Right. And this is my opportunity to give back. And, you know, so I met his dad, Chris's dad, and his brother was, I think it's Don and Cody.
Mm-hmm.
I met them because I went down to help Citizens First at Carolina Fire Days last year. So they did their prioritize the search hot class. So I met those guys, but I didn't haven't really talked to them, you know, as much as I was able to hang out with Chris because I was with him for a whole weekend before. But yeah, it's just, you know, it's cool. I've been to the National Fire Academy. You know, we send our officers out there to do the command and control classes. And I know they kind of get a bad rap for not doing hands-on stuff, but their command classes are really good. They really helped me out. And then, you know, just I've met some awesome people out there, you know, across the fire service that, you know, are now lifelong friends. In fact, there's a group of us. There's a guy from – these guys are all chiefs, right? So there's chiefs, and then there's me, this, you know, lowly lieutenant, right? But one in Texas, one in Oregon, and then another guy that was around the middle central Ohio area. He just moved once he retired. But we all try to get together once a year. So last year we went out to Seattle and caught a baseball game. We brought the families with us. This year we just booked the dates. We're going to Texas in the summer, and we're all going to meet up. Another guy that was in class with, who was a battalion chief in Topeka, Kansas, He became friends with Mo Davis in a class out there from Houston. So when we flew out to Wichita, we hung out with him and Mo Davis all weekend. So just the people you get to meet and the places you get to go, and it's just awesome.
Definitely, definitely is. To cap off, to finish off the interview, I wanted to hit on leadership, seeing how you are a company officer. So, what would be your message to anybody that's aspiring to be a leader, or anyone that, or anybody that's in a current leadership position that is okay with complacency, that isn't just quite, they're not quite hitting the mark?
Yeah, so leadership is certainly, actions, right? Like no, there's not a position of leadership or not a position of leader, right? We hope that our officers are leaders, but they may not be. And you can certainly be a leader without being an officer. So, what I would say to the folks that are, complacent is, humble yourselves before something humbles you, because it's going to happen, and you're eventually going to get caught. And, you may take 99 fire alarms that are false, and that one time it's the real deal, right? And so be cognizant. I'm a big positivity guy, so we kind of have like three rules for our crew, show up with a positive attitude, never walk past a problem, and find a positive in a bad situation. And so we hold ourselves to that. And I find myself catching myself, on that too, of like you walk past something, you look at it, and you're like, what is that? And you're like, hold on, no, it got to go back and fix it, right? It's a problem. So, just humble yourself, and the fire service is bigger than all of us, and lead by example, and especially if you're not an officer and you aspire to be one, just remember people are always watching, and what you're doing today, like they're gonna remember that in the future. So if you're not doing, now is the time to start displaying those leader qualities. And like, you're going to get some pushback for it. People don't like change. People don't like other people start doing more than them. You just got to persevere through that. Be persistent, find some mentors, and we all have them. Find some mentors and find what I call it, the inner circle, is the guys that are willing to tell you what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. And it's a much smaller group. But reach out to those guys and say, hey, here's the things I'm doing. I'm on the right track. And they'll let you know if you are, if you aren't. If you are on the right track, then just keep doing it. And if you're not on the right track, you got to listen to those guys, and then you got to get straightened up. But start now. Don't wait till you try and promote. No one likes a guy that sits on the chair, until it's promotion time, and then they want to start doing stuff. Start doing that stuff now, early in your career. Set some standards for yourself, and then live up to them.
Oh, yes. Lots of good little nuggets, tips for company officers out there, man. Especially the surrounding yourself with people who are going to tell you like it is. I mean, yes, there's place and a time. If you're the officer, you don't want to question your officer on a call at all. Wait till you get back to the station. But hopefully you have an officer that will accept that, hey, they're not always going to tell me what I want to hear, and that's okay. Like, I mean, I've heard stories of officers out there who have crews that will not say a thing to them because it's like I cannot question their judgment or authority or whatever the case may be. And if you're surrounding yourself with people who only tell you what you're going to hear, it's destined for failure because in your mind you're doing everything right while the outside looking in is like, this dude is totally wrong. So like that was that that's big. That's big.
Yeah, ego is our worst enemy, right? I mean, we get out there and there's, whether it's a generational thing or just the world turning, whatever, but a lot of people are asking the why question. And we still see people, well, because I said so. That don't work anymore. Like I want my guys to ask why. I want them to understand, if I can't explain the why, then I probably don't have a good reason behind what I'm wanting to do. So now, like you said, right, there's a time and a place for that, right? If I tell them, hey, stretch this line, I want you to drop a 2.5, and they'd be like, well, why would we do a 2.5, right? In the middle of a ripping fire, like that's going to be a problem. But when we get back, I want them to say, hey, like, why did you drop this, 2.5 here? Well, because I saw this, and this, and based on my past experiences and recognition, prime decision making, and all that, this is why. And then hopefully they understand. And yeah, maybe they still disagree, right? But if there's at least some rationale versus, you know, they come back and, well, why did we pull a 2.5? Well, because I said so, and I'm the officer. Like, all right, like, you know, we talked a lot about culture, right? Well, you got to build relationships before you can build a culture. And like, that ain't going to help build a relationship.
Love it. Love it. Corey, man, I seriously, I appreciate you coming on and talking like I call it the gospel, to firemen that actually care about the job, that want to hear it. I appreciate everything that you do. For your culture class, if somebody wanted to get a hold of you to see if you can come down and teach that for their department, how would they go about doing that?
You can just email me. So it's my first initial and last name. So CSTROUP30@gmail. And that's the best way you can find me. I'm on all social media stuff. I'm on Facebook, Instagram. You can find me on there and reach out. You can send me a message on either one of those, just Corey Stroud, that's on there. But that'd be the best way to get a hold of me, and we can definitely get something put together.
All right, fantastic. You heard it there. You heard it here first from the man himself. Corey, like I said, man, I truly appreciate you coming on, talking shop, and hopefully you have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, man, appreciate you having me. I really like what you're doing. I like your podcast. I like to listen to them when I'm cleaning my house, you know. But because, you know, what you're doing for the fire service is tremendous, right? Is getting the word out, and you know, it's a lot of work on your end, right? Because this ain't just us sitting down talking. It's us sitting down talking, and then you got to go back and edit and put things together, and you got to put it out there. So that's a lot of work, and it's a good thing you're doing for the fire service. So, you know, keep up the good work on that front.
Thank you. Appreciate it, man.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.